Sign up to get an email every time a blog is published. Kelly says, Jen's story empowers us all to rise above our circumstances. Jen is an inspiration to all who have the privilege of being touched by her life. Her writing style is open, honest, and engaging. Her story is powerful, not because it's heart-wrenching, which it is, but because she chooses every day to live a life that shows she is not a victim of her circumstances. Jen's strength as a woman empowers us all to overcome the circumstances of our own lives. If you've checked all the boxes in life and yet you still wake up wondering, is this all there is? Or you find yourself feeling overwhelmed and stressed or triggered by past events, the blog will help you get through those negative emotions and lean into joy. Corrine says, when I signed up with Jen, I had no idea it was possible to be joyful. I couldn't see the joy in my life, even though I knew it was there. Jen helped me not only identify the joy, but see how much I had to be grateful for. Each day starts differently because of Jen and her coaching. I highly recommend her if you are ready to turn the switch from negative to positive. It's 100% free to subscribe to the blog. Go to the link and connect with Jen and choose joy.
Welcome to At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster, where we bear it all spiritually and emotionally. I'm your host, Jen Taylor. Each week on the podcast, I'll bring you an inspiring message to support you in designing and creating a vibrant, fulfilling life. Before we dive in, please visit the Facebook community in the links to ask questions that I can answer during this live podcast. At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster is for those of you who know that there is more to life and that our true, authentic souls are built for greatness. You are built with strength and love that is meant to shine through in times of conflict and in times of celebration. Welcome. I cannot wait to bear it all with you. In my business, I coach Christian women to step into who they are meant to be, inspired by their purpose and God-given gifts. Find the link in the description to join my private Facebook group. I can't wait to see you there. Let's get started. I'm going to check my sound really quick just to make sure. Yep, it looks like everything's good. Sometimes I have glitches in the sound, so thank you for your patience with that. I want to go over one thing. My Facebook private Facebook group is where I have exclusive content. It's where, you know, my podcast is going there, but I also have a lot of exclusive content there, and I'm going to put it in the link because it is the best place to join and reach out with me. So there you go. Welcome. Today I'm doing a solo podcast episode. I was on a value add interview this morning. I interviewed somebody about what she does in her business, and we talked briefly about, let's move this off my face. How about that? There we go. That was awesome. So we were discussing analytics briefly, but it made me think about analytics and how important they have become to me. Also, how much I kind of like to geek out on them. And one of the reasons that I love them so much is that it gives you so much feedback about the content that you are putting out there and how people engage in it, what people like to see, because that lets us know as entrepreneurs what we should hone in on. That is why I'm doing the solo episode today. Last minute, forgive me about my ramblings already, on minimalism. And I'm going to share my journey because it's the story that I have. I will add other stories or reasons for minimalism that might relate to you and where we're at now. So one of the reasons I'm doing this is because minimalism blogs and videos are overwhelmingly, like by a landslide, what people respond to the most for me. So that makes me realize it's what you want to hear about. And the other reason is how it's affecting my life right now. Minimalism became a really big buzzword about a decade ago. I'm sure it's always been around in one way or another. And the reason that I know that that is the case is that I remember being in high school and having friends who wanted to backpack Europe. So basically, the most important things specific to what they were doing, but also the most important things to them in one backpack. Touring Europe, or like I had friends that were in Greenpeace, which I thought I would end up doing, did not. And they're really honing down their belongings to really specifically what they need, what they use the most, what means the most for them. And it also changes consumerism, because when you're living a lifestyle that's so specific and honed down, you can't just pick things up on your travels and your trips. You have to be super intentional about what you purchase, your consumerism habits, how much space you have to carry those with you or ship them back or whatever the case may be. You're just more intentional in how you think. And that is minimalism. It's a more extreme version of minimalism. I do have a couple of friends who live that way currently, where all they own fits into the back of their car, or all they own fits into a suitcase, a carry-on, and a purse, or the backpack that they have. So minimalism in some way, shape, or form is probably something you have heard about. When you heard about it, you might have thought, that's crazy, and I never want to do that. And I have felt that way. I don't want everything I own to only fit into a backpack. However, when I began my minimalism journey 7 years ago, and let's talk about how that happened first. I had 8 kids living at home. I had just had one move out, so I was down to 8. And then Dane and I met, and he had 4 kids, and we blended families. And when we blended families, he and 4 kids moved into my house. I had a house that was already like full of stuff. I was doing a couple things to accumulate stuff. One thing, when I found things or I had things that I thought, oh, I'm going to have kids that are going to move out in the next few years, I'll keep it for them. I had a table and chairs. I had dressers. I had like full on furniture in this 3-car garage that I was keeping. I had people give me stuff. I had a couch set that we used and it worked. I didn't like it though, but we used it and it worked. I also was given like this massive china cabinet. I never wanted a china cabinet. I didn't own china. The thought of having this huge piece of furniture that has lots of glass and mirrors and lights and takes a lot to clean and take care of and basically houses things you want to show off but you don't use very often, that made no sense to me. But I kept it because somebody gave it to me. And like, I didn't want to make them feel bad if I got rid of it, which retrospectively, in my case, for me, is a really dumb reason to keep something. However, I was keeping stuff for that reason. So Dane and I blended families. First of all, subsequent relationships and marriages have a lower statistic of succeeding. And we've both been married before. Also, relationships that are subsequent that blend families with children in both of them also have a lower success rate. So we were just jumping into this journey with 12 kids at home and 18 kids total. Like, we're going to make this happen. Our house was overrun with stuff. And a lot of that was me. Dane came from a really small place. Without sharing his story, he had downsized for several reasons in several ways, not all of them good. I had had my house burglarized a few years before meeting Dane. And when your house is burglarized and people come in and take things that are yours, I think there was a part of me that wanted to hang on to other things that I owned because it hadn't been my choice to give those things up, if that makes sense. So I think I had a little bit of baggage there. And, you know, this intention of keeping things for my kids when they move out to make their transition easier, great intention, poor execution. Also, I love, love, still love, it's not past tense, going to yard sales and look bombing around. It's just like a fun pastime for me. I don't like to have yard sales, garage sales, but I like to go to them. And I love finding old furniture that looks terrible and bringing it home and refinishing it and giving it like a new life. There's something about that that's super cathartic for me. It's very peaceful. I love refinishing furniture. The problem with that is that it's not like I was ever doing it with the intention of starting a business. So I would pick up things super cheap. And it's the super cheap part that allows you to justify the consumerism. Like, I didn't spend very much. So that's one thing to just keep in mind for later on when I talk about consumerism. You're not spending a lot. But I also wasn't getting rid of things. So I was either finding places to put things in my home or I was putting them in my garage. And I don't know what my plan was with that. I don't think I had one, but I was accumulating. I had downsized into the house that I was in. Two things happened. One, I want my home to be, if you come to my home, I want you to feel happiness. I want you to feel comfortable. I want you to feel less stressed and relaxed. I want you to see what's important to me, the things that I love. And I had a friend come over and she walked in and she said, "Wow, you have a lot of stuff." That is not a statement that means she feels happy and less stressed. And what she knows that's important to me is that I have a lot of stuff. So that was a comment that I'm super grateful happened and really hit me. The other thing that happened is that Dane used to have Sunday and Wednesdays off. So on Wednesday, when I went to work way back then, he would clean on Wednesdays. And he looked at me, he called me one day and he said, I don't even know how to help clean the house anymore. There's just so much stuff. And he was very clear at how overwhelming that was. And those two comments stopped me and I reevaluated and realized that every day driving home from work, I was stressed. I knew that I had to get dinner on, feed everybody, make sure everybody had help with their homework after a full day of work at 5 or 6 o'clock at night. Showers, brushing teeth, hugs, hearing about their day, connecting with my kids, making sure all that happened. And also I knew that they would come home, kind of dump their stuff like kids tend to do, that they would take stuff out and that I would spend time basically feeling like my house had been hit by a tornado and I had to put it back together. Those two comments emphasized to me how much stress I was feeling about our home. It was a conversation that was hard to have because we had just blended families and moved in, and Dane didn't want me to think it was my fault, and I didn't want Dane to think it was his fault. So we were kind of not having this conversation. So what did I do? I went down a Google rabbit hole. I didn't know what minimalism was, so I did some sort of search like streamlining and organizing your home. I honestly no idea what I actually put in the search bar, except I am really not compulsively, but almost compulsively organized. It's one of the things in life I know I can control. And so I like to control how organized I am. Paperwork, the bins that the toys were in, everything. I am really good at organizing. So the good news is, and the bad news, that I knew it wasn't an issue of organization. It was an issue of accumulation. In my Google rabbit hole search to become the Google master and regain a feeling of control over my house and decreasing the stress, I learned about minimalism. So I'm going to use this as an example. I use an example in my coaching. Also, minimalism is part of how I coach people, and it does not have to look like my journey at all. My journey is just my story. Dane recently bought me a car, which is the coolest thing. I didn't have a car for almost a year. I didn't really want one. Then I hit the point where, like, it'd be cool to have a car again. And I got to, for the first time in my life, really, really look at what did I want just for me. I don't have to cart kids around anymore. And I bought a Toyota RAV4. I wanted between the years of 2002 and 2012 so I could get the 6-cylinder engine. Yes, it gets worse gas mileage than I thought it was going to get. I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be like stellar. It gets 18. I was hoping for like 22, maybe 24. I was looking for a very specific thing though that met my needs that were about what I wanted. Do you have any idea how many Toyota RAV4s are out on the road? Because I didn't until I started looking at them. And it's not that there are more Toyota RAV4s out there. It's that my awareness changed. And now I had opened up what I looked for and what I saw to encompass Toyota RAV4s, and I was aware of them more. That's the same thing that happened to me with minimalism. It was always there. I had heard about it. As a matter of fact, when I really started learning about minimalism, when I went down that rabbit hole and it took me into this minimalism content and subject, I realized that when my oldest daughter, she's 29 now, when she was a year old, from the time that she was 1 to the time that she was 3, we live with only what fit in my car. I did have a storage unit. Actually, it was a part of someone's barn that they let me store stuff in. So I kept the furniture I had in my apartment, which wasn't a tremendous amount at that time, but I loved my couch set and I had my bed. And, you know, I put that in storage and I fit what went into my car. It was a suitcase full of my clothes, a suitcase full of Brianna's clothes, a box of clothes she was growing into, a container that had all of her toys in it, my jogging stroller. We had a dog and she had a pet rat in a 10-gallon tank. So there was a spot for the 10-gallon tank and a spot for her car seat and a place for the dog. And in the back of the car, we had, you know, dog food and stuff to clean out the cage for her pet rat. And I fit all the things that were the highest priority for me in that car. And we traveled from Louisiana to Vermont to Idaho to Arizona back to Louisiana. Like, I traveled the country with my daughter for 2 years as a nomad. A friend would say, hey, come crash at my house in Idaho. I have a room you can rent. I got $250 a month in child support. I owned my car. So I had auto insurance and gas and food. That was pretty much the only bills that I had. And I would stay at a friend's house and rent their room. And while I stayed in that location for a few months, I cleaned houses for a living and I was a nanny. And that way I could bring Bree with me to work everywhere that I went. And I made just enough so that it covered our needs. And I did that for 2 years. And it, as much as it sounds maybe crazy to some of you, it was one of the happiest 2 years in my life that I can remember. I made the least amount of money and I owned the least amount of belongings and I was the happiest. And it hadn't even occurred to me in all the years since then. Minimalism was 7 years ago. So Brianna would have been 22. And I did that from when she was 1 to 3. So I hadn't noticed in 20 years that one of the happiest times was when I had the least amount of money and owned the least amount of belongings. But looking into minimalism made it like that so clear to me that the times in my life when I have really loved my life the most was when I owned the least. So Dane and I started having these conversations and we had a 3-car garage and it was totally packed. So one of the first things that we had to do was really start to at least get the garage organized. The other thing that I did was I made a list of every room in the house and then every closet in the house. Now, closets and bathrooms were the easiest for me to go through because they're just smaller areas. It really, in a couple of hours, you can have a bathroom and pretty much a closet done. And the other room in the house that was the easiest was our living room. We had three living areas. We had a living room, a family room, and like a playroom area. And the living room was the easiest. The playroom, the family room, not the easiest place in the house. And the other most stressful place in the house was not necessarily my bedroom, but it was all the closet space. I had two massive closets that were filled, two big dressers, and a whole shelving unit for shoes because I owned about 135 pairs of shoes. So my accumulation had been ridiculous. And it was really apparent right away that I was using that, even refinishing furniture, which was a cathartic process that I enjoyed, I was using that as like fuel, part of my accumulation process, keeping things for my kids when they moved out. It was an accumulation process, but I wasn't letting go of things. And there's something in that that you need to look into for yourself as part of filling a void or trying to create happiness that you just really need to investigate when you're going through this process for yourself. So I took closets and bathrooms and that living room as what I would tackle first. And also my closet situation and my garage as two of the hardest areas, and literally just started chipping away. I think it's pretty common in minimalism, and this is what I did. I had a pile to keep, a pile to throw away, and a pile to donate. The throwaway pile is really easy, and the absolute keep tends to be pretty easy, although it changes, and we'll get to that. The donation pile and the keep pile, those are where people tend to struggle. I created a rule that I had to try on every piece of clothing, every pair of shoes. You take everything out of your closet. I did it incrementally because I just literally had so much stuff. So I take a section of my closet that I thought, you know, I can manage this in the next couple hours. Try every single thing on, use a full-length mirror, be brutally honest. And stuff that doesn't fit you well or that you don't love, it's easy to put in that discard pile until there's sentiment behind it. I had this, it was a sweater, but it was dressy like a blazer. And so it's kind of like a sweater blazer. A friend of mine had gotten it in Europe. It meant so much to me. I absolutely loved it. I loved this piece of clothing. And no matter how many times I put it on, it did not fit me well. And every time I put it on, excited to wear it, I would take it back off because it didn't fit me well. It had a great amount of sentiment. I really loved it, how it looked, how beautiful it was, and it had a lot of sentiment. Sentiment and love for the fabric or how it looks does not make it fit better. And those were the items that were difficult. The items that were sentimental or that you loved even though they didn't fit you well. So there was kind of an obvious like trash pile and an obvious like, oh, I know I wear this all the time. I'm totally going to keep it. This is one of the tried and trues. It's in my 10 outfit rotation. Those were easy categories, but the donate and getting rid of the sentiment for something was a lot more difficult. So you just kind of have to, it's a work in progress. Here's the thing. Making a note for myself. Here's the thing with all of that. It's a process. I got super emotional lots of times in getting rid of things, and that's normal. Expect it. It's going to happen. In 3 months period of time, however, we had gone through the house and the garage like a couple rounds. It's not a one and done. You're not going to finish it all in one fell swoop. I went through everything multiple times. So, sorry, writing a note. We have been doing this for 3 months. And I also want to tell you something. When you work on a room, like my living room, that's a super easy thing to work on. We went through it. It didn't take a lot of time. It looked great. It felt great. It was, you walk into the room and you feel happy, but it didn't start out that way. And you're cleaning and you're moving things around and you're rearranging and you're doing all of that. And then at some point it's done and you walk in and it hits you and you realize, oh my gosh, I love being in this room. And it feels good to be in the room and you enjoy it. And you're going to want more. And you fit your clothes in your closet and you realize the stuff you hang out, for the most part, it takes a couple rounds, but for the most part, these are things that you wear and you love to wear that when you put on, you feel good and you'll start to enjoy to go into your closet. And it becomes like this euphoric, cleansing, cathartic thing to start to get rid of your stuff. It's also stressful and emotional and sentimental. It's hard. So we went through this process for 3 months. I did have garage sales. I didn't love them. I'm really glad I let Dane convince me, because at the 3 month mark, we heard that our house was selling and we had 30 days to move. We were, one, so glad that we had gone through as much as we had, because it made it so much less overwhelming. And also, it was easier to get rid of some of the stuff that we were kind of hanging on to, because we didn't want to move it to the next place. And the journey continued on in the last 7 years. We have downsized the home we move into. Every time one of our kids is moving out, they have the choice to keep their bed, dresser, all of their belongings, and all of their furniture and take them with them. And if they don't want them, we donate them like the same day they move out. It's not because we're excited for them to move out. It's because we do not want to ever go back into that trap of accumulation and consumerism. The other thing that minimalism does is that all of a sudden it's like the RAV4. You start to see it everywhere. You see groups and conversations and other people's ideas. And there are a couple rules of thumb with minimalism. First of all, Marie Kondo says, you know, you hold your item and do you use it or does it spark joy? Because the art on my walls, I'm not using, but they spark joy. So you need to use it or it needs to spark joy. And that's a fairly common theme said in different ways throughout minimalism communities. The other thing is that you have to figure out how to set limits and parameters on what you're keeping, or like how much do you keep. And one of them is counting. You're allowed 5 pairs of pants, whatever the number is, or it's a container. You can keep as many pairs of pants as fit in this container. I don't necessarily count my things at all anymore, although I did do that and it did definitely serve a purpose for a period of time. It is a great way to figure out how much you have. I noticed in counting that I inadvertently, over and over and over again, keep the number 7. 7 short sleeve shirts, 7 long sleeve shirts, 7 pairs of pants. That was just an interesting side note. I wasn't counting and narrowing down, but when I narrowed down and decided to count, it was very interesting that the number 7 came up over and over again. I don't know what that means. The other thing is that, but I don't do that very often. I use everything that I own, or it brings me joy, but I use everything that I own. You try on every piece of clothing and jewelry and pair of shoes that you own to make the decision. And that, just knowing, also you don't purchase anything unless you try it on. And man, I don't like trying stuff on at a store. So that curbed a lot of shopping for me in the early days. And the other thing is, and with my kids and with minimalism, with 12 kids at home and 18 kids total, and using this in my coaching to varying degrees in different ways, minimalism looks and feels different for everyone, and your reasons behind it are going to be different. So with the kids, it is true that they had a certain amount of space in the house, and what they owned needed to fit in that space. Having said that, you can also be very creative with how you use the space. So you can have more fit into a space based on how creative you are, how you fold things, how you situate things, So we let our kids keep as much as they wanted to, as long as it fit in a certain space. And we were also we gave them a lot of grace because this was our minimalism journey and not theirs, as far as helping them be creative in how we could help keep their stuff. That's just a suggestion for kids. So you can count your items, you can use containers to fit your items, you can do a combination of those, and being creative with storage. All of those things are ways that minimalism works in your house. There were moments in minimalism where I sat and just cried. Either it was exhausting, I felt the weight of guilt for what I was keeping, or I felt the weight of sadness in getting rid of some things. And what keeps you going in that is that you start to realize that when you get rid of things, you actually don't miss them. I did a lot of take pictures of everything before you get rid of it, so you'll always be able to remember it. Once I did that, I really didn't actually ever look at the pictures again. I just know that I can if I want to. And you start to feel lighter. You walk into that room that's been done and it makes you happy and you want more and you feel less and less and less stress. Most people who are embracing minimalism, stress is a factor somewhere. It can be financial stress. It can be the stress of losing a loved one and gaining all of the things from that loved one, you know, inheriting things. It can be the stress of having to afford a higher payment on renting or owning a home to house all your stuff. But stress is usually some sort of thread somewhere in there. There are other reasons that people embrace minimalism, of course. Some people, it is financial. It's purely financial. Some of it is wanting to leave a smaller footprint in the world. Some of it is because something has happened to change life. Like the pandemic was a great example of that. But like we were asked to move out of a house because they were selling it and we found a house that was smaller. So we also had to downsize because we were moving into a smaller space. There's a lot of different things that force you to deal with what you own. For us, it was legitimately stress. However, it became the other things. And I think that that's also a common thread. It became finances. Minimalism spills into everything. So it'll spill into your email, your social media, the friends you have. You will start to become intolerant for anything that weighs you down, creates stress, you don't like or want in your life, from your belongings to the email you're getting. And also, it really, although finances were not part of why we started at all, we also started to look at what were we spending money on. And you realize that you get into the keeping up with the Joneses or the greatest new thing or that item, that shirt that's on sale. So you're not spending too much. It's totally worth having, or picking up furniture to refurnish that you never refinish, that you never do anything with. You start to realize your habits and patterns. And then Dana and I looked at, like, what are our finances? What subscriptions are we paying for that we don't need to pay for? We got rid of cable. We got rid of some subscriptions. Like we used minimalism in our finances, in everything in life, and started cutting out anything that we weren't using or that wasn't bringing us joy. And from email to cable. So it spills over. And then you realize you're spending less because you're not getting sucked into keeping up with the Joneses and you're not getting sucked into spending money. And also you're downsizing, you're minimizing what you're spending money on a monthly basis. It made us much more aware, which was a fantastic result. And then you do realize, like for us, we continue to move into smaller homes over the last 7 years because our kids were moving out. They were taking our stuff. We were also continuing to downsize personally as we went. And you've hit this kind of happy place where what you own is serving you and you don't really want to downsize it more. Could we? Yes. Do we want to? No. And you've kind of found this happy, your closets look and feel good, your house looks and feels good, and you own what you want to own. Also, you start to get this mentality like, well, if I buy a shirt, I need to really look at what I own. It's a kind of a one in, one out philosophy where if you purchase something, you get rid of something. It also just makes you think a lot more about what you own and what you want to buy, and is buying it worth that and that exchange. So you hit this point. Some people in minimalism keep the house they in, but they make it a much more streamlined, intentional space where it just feels good. And some people downsize to a backpack. We are finishing a renovation on an RV and moving in. We're down to one child at home from 12 just a few years ago. And as part of our minimalism journey, we wanted to live full-time in an RV. That sounds crazy to some people. Sometimes it sounds crazy to us. What you notice, though, again, it's like now I see Toyota RAV4s. You notice in minimalism, especially after almost 7 years, that there are pockets of people that live intentionally in specific ways, just like people who backpack. And one of those is a full-time RV. There's RVs, schoolies, van life, these different pockets of people who live very intentionally. And it becomes part of what you know and what you love and what you follow, and you start to want that. The RV life at this point in our life is definitely more for me. I moved a lot as a kid. I've moved a lot in my whole life, and I have a hard time finding roots any place that I live. And the idea of putting the things that I love and use the most into one smaller area and being able to take that with me wherever I go is super, super appealing to me. The other thing that makes it easier for us is that we're renting a storage unit. So I don't actually have to get rid of anything. I can put things in storage and we can make a decision. Our initial plan was to buy the RV, and we wanted one big enough that we could live in, but also small enough to travel in. So it's a little tight to live, a little big to travel in. We did that on purpose. Through that process, which you can learn about through other videos that I've done, we had money for the RV and money for down payment on the house, and we ended up not intentionally, not what we wanted to do, using all that money on the RV. We didn't spend more than what is very common for people to spend, but it was more than we were planning on. The good news is the housing market is not at a point where we want to buy it. So moving into the RV permanently means we can save up that money. I think in an ideal, perfect situation, at this moment, in just my opinion, see all those clarifications, I would own a small home. I would own an RV to travel in. So it would probably be smaller than the one that we have, although I do love the one that we have, but possibly smaller than that. I would have up to 5 other RVs, schoolie, fifth wheel, trailer, tiny houses that were on my property. And I would love to rent out some full-time and some as a weekend or week-long rentals. So actually a business where I renovated the structures myself and I ran a business renting them out full-time or part-time. And I had one that I could travel in whenever I wanted to, but I actually lived in a small house. It's much more intentional. So right now, if it was just me making the decision, that is how I would set things up. That is a square peg in a round hole at this current moment in time. Our plan is to finish that renovation on our RV. We're at the point right now where we're ready to rent the storage unit, start putting everything that we're not putting in the RV into storage, finishing the renovation and moving into the RV full time. That might mean we love it and we do it forever, and we never want to buy another house. It could mean we love it, but we still want our own house. it could mean that this renovation sends us on a path where I might create a business renovating, because man, have I freaking loved this process. And eventually owning a home where we can do rentals, where we have a place to park them and where we can rent them out. I don't care, because I love the journey. I think it's an adventure. I love where we're at right now and where it might bring us. What I want to make clear to you is that regardless of the catalyst behind you living a more intentional life and what that means to you and how minimalism plays a part, my story is very similar to a lot of people's stories, and it's not similar to a lot of people's stories. So you get to create what that journey looks like to you. But I want to impress upon you that being more intentional with your life is a money thing, a stress thing, a smaller footprint thing. And it's also a journey that takes you down different tangents that you wouldn't expect. And it also means that suddenly you'll be seeing Toyota RAV4s. Or not Toyota RAV4s, but whatever part of the minimalism journey speaks to you the most. I have loved our journey. It has helped my relationship with my husband. It has been super helpful in my relationship with my kids, in helping them let go. There is a lot that we hold on to in our belongings. Some of that is the baggage we carry. Some of that is past baggage, trauma-related baggage. Some of that is in our own insecurities. And in this process for myself, it's really helped me work with clients in coaching as a small part of what I do. And it's also helped in the conversations that I have with my kids as they're moving and in what they really value the most. It's really interesting how it's related to trauma and how we hang on to things. I find it fascinating in my own journey and in other people's journey. And I want you to just figure out what that could look like to you. Start small. Start with really loving what you own. As like a Christian woman, this sounds a little woo-woo. I love woo-woo, though. I got to tell you, God's in everything, including the woo-woo. And so you take an item, Marie Kondo, you hold the item and you decide, does this item spark joy? And you can decide that it doesn't and thank it and send it on its own way to spark joy in someone else. Or you can decide, yes, this really brings me joy. There is something in holding every one of your items that you own and really feeling into the emotion that you carry that's tied to that item. And one is the ability to let things go with grace, and the other, it's the ability to realize what you really hold the most valuable. And I'm going to end on a note that the most difficult thing for me was that we had 18 children that have all made us beautiful creations throughout their life. And some of them are cute and maybe not beautiful. Some of them are really, I have something right here I can pull out right now. That this one Alana made for me. So things that they made that maybe used to be just on a shelf to display because I was proud of my kids and that they made this thing, right? When we went through this process, I actually, on a table, made a pile for each child. So some kids made a whole bunch more stuff than other kids. And the kids got to come and look at their stuff. And I said, I love you and I love everything you made. Having said that, I can't keep everything you've made. So the first thing I want you to do is look at this and tell me, are there items that you've made that you would like, that mean a lot to you and you would like to keep? So they would take those and move them out of the equation. I know what my favorite thing is that you've made, or my top three, but you take yours first. And they did. And yes, my kids were a little bit older. So before that, I would just have to make that call on whether or not it was something that I kept. I also created a hope chest for each one of my kids. It's a Rubbermaid container they took with them when they left. So it was an item that I didn't necessarily want to keep, but they weren't old enough to make that decision. It did go in their hope chest and they can make that decision later. So that's an option. With the items that were remaining, I said, these are my favorite 1 to 3 items that you've made that I would like to keep. So then we have this remaining pile. And what do you think is the best thing to do with this remaining pile? Are there other people you'd like to gift these to? Are there things that you don't think are worth keeping? When you have children who have created things and they're very sentimental, or even friends and family that have created things that are very sentimental, and yet you can't keep them, it's a really good process to go through with them. It also helped my kids on their own minimalism journey. So that's a suggestion for how to get rid of all the sentimental things. I also looked at them like this, the dish, right? Can I use this dish for something specific? Like if I need a container for these items in my office, a pen container or a container for paper clips. Like I own these things, I use them and I put them in a container. Can I use one of the containers my kids created for those items instead of the little plastic thing I got at the Dollar Tree? So those are some suggestions for you so you have more beautiful things as containers in your home, or to just use things in a very out of the box ways. Thanks for being on this podcast. I'm glad that minimalism strikes a chord in so many people because it's my absolutely by a landslide most popular posts and videos. And I am here for you and your minimalism journey. I do want to impress upon you the private Facebook group. Please join the private Facebook group. I do have exclusive content in that group, all little pieces and parts of my coaching program for those of you who want to DIY your journey. And also that's where I spend time talking to the people that I coach. So you can get a lot of information. I want to, over time, create a community where it's not just about me providing content, but it's about connecting with a tribe that really speaks your language that you want to connect with. Until next time, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. Thank you for investing your time with me on At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster. I'm so glad that you joined in the conversation. It would be amazing if you would share this episode with someone you think can benefit from it. All guests' links and audience freebies are available on the podcast page of momof18.com. This podcast was designed to help you in your struggles. So reach out and let me know what you enjoy and what you would like to see more of. It will support me on the journey to causing a worldwide epidemic of healing, gratitude, and joy. Until next time, remember, you're not alone in your struggle. Reach out to me on any platform. I love to connect. You are worth it to me.